called minutes from our January 25th meeting. Has everyone had a chance to read them?
I'm reading them right now.
Move we approve the minutes.
Commissioner Culver, motion to approve. Commissioner Von Ocken, second. All in favor, raise your hand. Let's see. 7 approve and 2 abstentions, I believe. Did I get that right? 1, 2, 3, 4.
3.
We had 3 abstentions? Good. 3 abstentions. Committee reports are next up on our list. Anybody have some committees to report on? Seeing none, we'll move to communications. Receive written communications from the public. Anything other than what's in our packet?
No, sir.
Any communications from staff, planning commissioners, or other commissioners? I'm going to welcome Jim Weaver to our commission. Welcome, Jim. We're glad to have a new commissioner. He replaces Commissioner Herod, who resigned a couple months ago, maybe so. Yeah. So welcome, Jim. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And then staff, I believe, has some announcements as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to take a minute and just recognize the loss of a great community asset in David Guntert, who passed away this week. He had been with the city, serving this community for nearly 40 years, and gave his heart and soul to the city and to us. And we're going to miss him and his big smile, and to his family and wife Terry, we just wish them the best.
Thank you, Scott. For members of the public, David was a pretty special guy. He'd been with our planning department for a long, long time, and you may not know how much we count on staff and the amount of work that they do for our community. So David will truly be missed by all of our commissioners here, and just wanted to take a minute to think about David. Thank you, Scott. Any written action of waiver request or determinations made by the city engineer?
No.
Thanks. Disclosure of ex parte communications for the public. At this time, we ask our commissioners if they've visited on any item with a member of the public, that they share the communications that they had so that all commissioners can be fortunate to have that same information. Do we have any ex parte communications on any of the items for this evening? Seeing none, any declarations of abstentions from specific agenda items by commissioners? All right. With that, we will move into our meeting. We have a smorgasbord of new zoning requests and preliminary plats and special permits, but the first item will be for a request to rezone approximately 0.58 acres from County B1 to R1 at 697 East 1725 Road in Baldwin. Hi, Becky.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Becky Pepper, and I am with the City of Lawrence Douglas County Planning Department. The subject property is located in the unincorporated town of Vinland, which is in the 3-mile buffer area of Baldwin City. And the agenda indicates that this is a joint meeting with the... Oops, sorry about that. That this is a joint meeting with the City of Baldwin Planning Commission. However, Baldwin City indicated to me that the planning commissioners did not have any comments to provide on this particular rezoning request, and so they are not with us this evening. The primary zoning around the subject property is agricultural. There is limited industrial, light industrial that is located to the west, that's indicated here in the green area, and the subject property is zoned B1. The primary land uses that surround the property are agricultural and rural residences. There is the Vinland school site and the Vinland fairgrounds that are located on the northwest corner of North 700 and East 1750 roads. And then to the west is the Vinland Airport and the McFarland Aviation Manufacturer. The subject property is highlighted in blue here, and it contains the Vinland Presbyterian Church, although it has been vacant for some time. The properties south of this are small platted lots that contain single-family residential development. And the intent of the rezoning is to modify the church for single-family development. And the R1 zoning district was proposed for that, not only because it accommodates that single-family residential zoning, but also because of lot area size requirements. While the subject property is surrounded by the A district, the minimum lot area requirement for the A district is 3 acres. On the other hand, the minimum lot area requirement for the R1 zoning district is 10,000 square feet, and the subject property is 25,000 square feet, and so zoning it to R1 would be in compliance with that minimum lot area requirement. It would be non-compliant with the minimum lot area if it was zoned to A. As mentioned, the current zoning of the property is B1, and this is a neighborhood business district. The primary purpose of that district is for retail and personal services. The property was zoned to B1 in 1972, and this was to accommodate an antique shop and law offices. However, those developments never came to fruition, and the property has never entertained a retail or personal service type business on its property. The property is owned by some of the surrounding landowners who would now like to sell the property, and with the intent of it being developed as a single family. So that is where the rezoning request came from. And the intent behind this is that it would explain to potential buyers their development options and the expectations of the sellers. So the other factors to consider for the rezoning are listed in the staff report in more detail, listed on the screen here, but also in the staff report in more detail. As I mentioned, the surrounding property owners currently own this subject property. They would like to rezone it to a residential zoning district that would protect the surrounding area. And as such, there are no negative impacts that would be associated with this rezoning. And based on the findings of fact in the staff report, staff recommends approval of the rezoning request of approximately 0.58 acres from B1 to R1 district and forwarding it to the Board of County Commissioners with a recommendation for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Apologize, I got a little thrown off my game this evening by our sad news. Try to get back on and remind the public of how we have our meetings. So we usually start each item with a report from staff. Then we ask the applicant or a representative of the applicant to address the commission as well. Usually at that point, we ask the public to, if they have any input that they'd like to give. We ask you to come up to the podium, sign in with your address. If you're an individual, you have 3 minutes to speak. If you're here on behalf of a group, 5 minutes to speak. Once we close the public hearing, the applicant has a chance to respond to any public comments that have been made. After that applicant has responded, the commission may have questions for staff or for the applicant or sometimes from the public. We do ask that if we have questions from the public that we keep it to the question that was asked. And then we'll have a discussion among the commission, motions and votes at that time. So that was concluding the staff report. Now let's move to the applicant. Is there the applicant here or representative of the applicant would like to speak on item number one?
Yes, I'm Ray Wilbur, one of the shareholders in the project.
I'm Ray, can you give us your address, please?
502 East 1600 Road.
Thank you very much.
Yep. And thanks for considering this. The group has owned it for 17 years and And with the help of two grants, one from the county and one from the state, Historical Society has restored this church building. One clarification, it says in this report that it was empty. The sanctuary has been used as a workshop, that there's a house, half the building is a house that has been in continuous use since 82. It's only empty right now because we're making this transition. So we're getting ready to put it on the market.
Okay. Thank you very much. We may have some questions here in a little bit. We'll let you know.
All right.
Okay. Do we have any of the members of the public who would like to speak on item number one? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion, bring it back up to the commission if there's any questions. Commissioner Britton?
If I were smarter, I'd probably already know this, but question for staff. What's the purpose behind the lot minimum size in the A1 district? Why is there that distinction between the A and the R? And if it's just been that way for a long time, that's a fine answer too.
That's a part of the county zoning regulations. I think the intent of the difference between that is with the A district, it would be more of a rural type development. So properties that have agricultural uses with a single family residence also. So larger lot size to maintain that rural character of the area.
Thank you.
So is this property on Baldwin Sewer? I assume there aren't septic tanks and it lots this small.
Septic,
yes. It's on septic. And the rest of Vinland is that way also?
Yes.
No other questions? Yeah, Commissioner Britton?
I'll make a motion.
Great.
I move that we forward the rezoning request for approximately 0.58 acres from B1 district to R1 district to the Board of County Commissioners with a recommendation for approval based on the findings of fact found in the body of the staff report.
Thank you. We have a motion, Commissioner Britton. Commissioner Von Ocken seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor, raise your hand. Passes 9-0. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
Could I just make a comment?
Yes.
If you guys haven't been to Vinland, it's worth a drive to go down.
It is.
And see what they've been working on. And just Vinland's just this charming little community and it's got its own airport. library. How old's the library?
Arnold?
How long has the library, the Coal Creek Library, been there?
It was organized in 1859. The building it's in now was built in 1900. And it's still intact and as built, and with many of the original 100 books that they bought in 1859. Open Sunday afternoon, warm months.
And until recently, their librarian was
Smith, who was 107.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So, you know, it's worth a drive down there some weekend.
Thank you, Penny. All right. Let's move on to item number two, which is a preliminary plat for Paxton Place Edition on the southeast corner of 31st and Michigan.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Mary Miller, one of the City County Planners. And as you said, this is a preliminary plat for Paxton Place Addition. It's located on the southeast corner of 31st Street and Michigan Street. Just at the end of 2016, we had an annexation rezoning before you to rezone it to the RM15 district for apartment developments, very similar to the apartments to the west of Michigan Street. And also to zone it to the floodplain overlay district. There was quite a bit of floodplain on the property. This is a zoning map which shows how that zoning was set up. It shows the general location of the lot line. Each lot will have floodplain, and then each lot will have just some base zoning. This is the preliminary plat that's before you. It shows the two lots that are being proposed. The little red area up in the northwest corner is additional right-of-way that will be dedicated with the plat. That's to provide a uniform 75-foot right-of-way for 31st Street. It's a principal arterial, so it needs 150 feet total. So 75 feet on the southern side of the center line will be provided with this plat. All the utility easements are currently existing. We have a sanitary sewer line cutting through the property, and there's a utility easement for that. The wide easements on the corner and on the northeast corner, these contain Southern Star gas lines, so there's a 50-foot easement, but then there's, a 60-foot easement, but there's also a 100-foot no-build zone, and so those are shown on the plat as a, they show the easement and also the additional no-build zone. And then on the very bottom, there is a West Star easement in place. And the highlighted area in the corner shows the area that's being proposed for development with phase one. The concept plan was provided with the zoning. This shows the general idea of how the apartments and parking would be laid out in that corner. And so staff recommends approval of the preliminary plat, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report. And one of the conditions was that there's a the South Lawrence Trafficway is just to the south of the property, and there is a corridor overlay district with the South Lawrence Trafficway, and so we wanted that to be shown on the plat. There's just some landscaping and building requirements that apply to that corridor, and so that should be shown on the plat just for future information. And there is an access restriction on 31st Street that was shown on the plat. Let me go back to that real quick. But there is a note that indicates that that access restriction might not apply if the fire department determined they needed a secondary access on 31st. And then the other conditions, very minor. One was to dimension the West Star easement, and the other one was to show all the sidewalks on the adjacent roads and note the ones that was proposed and the one that's existing.
Thank you, ma'am.
I believe the applicant is present tonight.
Okay. The applicant would like to say a few words.
David Hamby with BG Consultants, representing the applicant, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thanks, David. Thanks. Appreciate it. Any members of the public like to speak on this item? It's a non-public hearing item, but we usually open those up because we like to hear from the public. All right. Seeing none, we'll bring it up to the commission. Commissioner Sands?
Mary, can you put up the initial sketch on the site, because I don't think that was in the staff report, or at least I missed it. Maybe I missed it. Back a couple slides. That one right there.
The concept plan?
Yeah, concept plan. Thank you.
Yeah, that was the general plan that was provided with the rezoning request. It gives an idea of how they plan to develop it.
And so that concept plan is not considering the gas easements, no build zones on either side, right?
Right. This piece here actually fits in this highlighted area.
It would be
up in the corner, so I'm afraid maybe that wasn't very clear, but that's kind of what's being planned up in this corner, and the rest of it's not, no development's being planned at this time.
So there's no planned development for lot 2. I'm sorry.
Not at this time.
I have another question.
Right.
No planned development for lot 2 yet?
Not currently, no.
Okay. What's the approximate acreage in lot 2, if you don't count?
It is about 1 million square feet. It's 1,175,000 square feet, and I would not be able to do the math for acreage very quick.
Okay.
But it's about 50 altogether, so you could figure maybe 25 acres on each one.
Okay.
Other questions, comments? Commissioner Sands, would you like to make a motion? I don't want to pressure you.
Well,
I guess what I'm thinking on here is I understand that there's not going to be any development in the floodplain area. I understand that part. And yet there's this lot two that has no planned development. But is that going to be left for open space? There's...
We rezoned that earlier, at an earlier meeting.
Yeah, it was September or August or...
Right, it was a recent rezoning, it's always had the potential to develop south of the floodplain on lot two as well.
But the plot...
It has development potential there. Obviously, the floodplain is substantial on this property.
Right.
So the first phase would be north of the floodplain, but there is opportunity to do something south, meet our codes, obviously.
But the plat is designed so that it would not be developed in the flood. I mean, we always get tricky on whether we're developing in the floodplain or not, and what that means.
So let's be clear about the floodplain. The floodplain, so this property was annexed into the city. And when we annex property into the city, because we add 2 feet of freeboard to the floodplain. That means, so vertically, 2 feet of floodplain, which horizontally spreads out, you know, widens whatever floodplain is there. Our codes do allow development in the floodplain. I believe it's up to 20% in the floodplain if you meet floodplain regulations. So your buildings are elevated higher, if they're habitable, you know, parking is out, all those kinds of things. So it's not that you can't develop in the floodplain. There's a cost associated with that, of course, and so many developers choose not to develop in the floodplain, but there is that potential under our code. So what this is showing, the plat is showing the lot layout, where the floodplain is, so that we have lines on the map so that when site plans come in, we know whether or not there's encroachment into that floodplain or not, and then how to handle development if there is.
So I'm comfortable making a motion. We're just talking about lot one, and I think what my initial confusion was is lot one is, this is elementary, I know, but it's shaped very similar to the whole development plan. So I recommend approval of the preliminary plat for Paxton Place addition, subject to the following conditions listed 1A through C, and with a recommendation to forward to the City Commission for approval.
Commissioner Sands, Commissioner Kohler seconds. Commissioner Von Ocken.
I just have a question of Mary. Mary, on the last page of your report, pardon me, it says some of this right-of-way is being held by KDOT and contains mitigated wetlands and a wetlands visitor center. So is the visitor center in the right-of-way?
Currently it is. It was site planned in the right-of-way because they have an agreement with KDOT that when the wetlands are mitigated, KDOT's going to give it to them. So based on that agreement, KDOT actually was the owner through the site planning and when it went through the county. So it's currently in the right-of-way, but due to the fact that they have this agreement, it had to be developed with the mitigation. So we don't normally site plan things in the right-of-way. It's just that this was a very special situation.
And so then at some point, that right-of-way where the mitigated wetlands is will be returned to the county or to
Probably to Baker? Baker.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Seeing no other comments, all in favor, raise your hand. Passes 9-0. Item number three is a rezoning at 3215 Austell.
This This request is to rezone a piece of property from the PCD Pine Ridge Plaza, the planned commercial development, to CS, commercial strip, which is a base zoning. The property is about 1 acre, and it is located on the west side of Osdahl, just south of the intersection with 31st Street. It is currently part of the Pine Ridge Plaza PCD, and you can see these buildings are the commercial buildings. They're oriented to the west, away from this area, and this area actually fronts Osdahl along with the other properties. This shows the current zoning of this block. It's all commercial except for the post office, which is zoned general plan, general public and institutional use district. The bold line shows the outlines of the planned development, and the dashed lines are properties that are zoned CS. The intention is to zone this small parcel from PCD to CS so that it's the same zoning as the two lots to the north. The applicant plans on developing these three lots with one development, and a minor subdivision was recently submitted to consolidate these three lots into one. This is the concept plan. It may be a little pale, but it shows the three lots. This is the one that we're proposing to zone to CS. That way all three lots have a uniform zoning district, and they can all be developed with a site plan rather than requiring a final development plan for a portion of it. And they would all be subject to our current development code standards. There's currently mini warehousing in the middle lot, and the plan is to border the exterior lots with mini warehouses and then have boat or RV storage on the interior. So with all zonings, we look at the specific criteria. One is zoning and land use. The red areas are all the different types of commercial zoning we have in the area. We have CS, we have CR for regional commercial, and we have the planned commercial developments. This area is identified as a regional commercial center in Lawrence. The blue is the general public and institutional use. And then the tan are the multi-dwelling for the resident, the apartments. And just to the east of Michigan Street is the apartment that we just discussed. This is a subject property. Just revising it from the PCD to the CS, we're still having commercial zoning, and it would remain compatible with the zoning and land use in the area. The character of the area is fairly high intensity. We have high intensity commercial uses, as we saw in the previous zoning map, and then we have medium intensity multi-dwelling residential to the east. It has good access to the higher classification road networks. The 31st Street is a principal arterial, and so is Iowa Street, and then these are major collectors bordering it on either side, so it has very good access. And then the plans, the revised Southern Development Plan recommends commercial for this area, so the alteration in the specific commercial zoning district would be compatible with the plan. Other things we look at, conformance with the comprehensive plan. This was evaluated with the original rezoning to a commercial district. It is suitable to the restricted uses, and as is noted in the staff report, the proposed uses would be permissible under the existing zoning. We're not changing the uses. It just would allow it all to be developed under one set of standards. The length of time it's vacant, this property has never been developed. It did have a approved final development plan, but it just did not occur. That was for a construction, sales, and services use. Potential detrimental impacts, any development could have some detrimental impacts. Typically, these would be lighting, or perhaps just the visual to adjacent properties. Our development code has lighting standards that we apply. We also have buffer yard requirements if you're adjacent to another district. For instance, across the road it is RM, and this is commercial strip, so there would be some buffer yard requirements. And we also have commercial design standards, which should result in an aesthetically pleasing development. And given the scope of this change, remaining commercial, there would be no benefit to the denial, because the change is actually very minor, and the use would still be permitted under the previous. The benefit to the applicant would be that they would be able to submit one site plan for all properties, and a standard set of standards would apply. And so staff does recommend forwarding this to the City Commission with a recommendation for approval based on the findings in the staff report.
Thank you, ma'am. Do we have a representative of the or do we have the applicant or a representative of the applicant?
Good evening. My name is Joy Ray. I'm here on behalf of the applicant. I'm with Paul Werner Architects. I think Mary did a great job of summing up everything that we're working with our client on for this particular piece of property. We think Mary did an awesome job. I don't know what much more I can add, but we're just looking forward to developing this as just one continuous lot. And like she said, it makes the process a little bit simpler. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
We do. We'll let you know.
Okay.
Thank you. Any members of the public here to speak on this item?
I'm Jeff Tucker, 1801 West 31st.
Come on up, Jeff.
Just a few questions.
Yes, if you could sign in, Jeff, there real quick.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
I was wondering if the same owner owned the property to the north. I'm not sure if that's actually two lots, but if the same owner owned all two or three lots.
So we will take your question under advisement. We may ask the applicant that here in just a second. Any other questions?
And then I would be curious if the property, the lot to the north, would be demolished, if their plan was to demolish the property and build all the way through, or try to fit it in, you know, build around it and make it fit their new plan.
Okay. Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
All right, we'll give a chance for the applicant to respond.
To answer those questions, the property owner does own all three. It wasn't like that when we originally submitted the application, but they closed in December, and Mary was good at getting things updated with the current property owner. So it's all owned by the same property owner. And the existing storage units are going to remain for now, and we're going to work around it. There'll be fencing and things like that, to landscaping, to pull it all together and make it a continuous development.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, that closes the public hearing. Questions here? Well, we'll have to open up the public hearing if we want to do that. So let's see what questions we have, if you have questions as well. Questions we have here?
Question,
Commissioner Britton.
It's for staff. Mary, can you tell us where the access point is to the existing lots and that potential third lot? Does it come in off the west side there?
They will come off of Scott just pointed out there's a shared access drive to the north. Okay. And so I think that's what they're planning on using for the access.
And an additional, there'll be one on Husall as well.
And then
down on that triangular piece of property that we're rezoning.
Joy, can you come up to the mic and say that? Thanks.
Mary, do I just go back here to get to your maps?
Hit the right button and say previous.
There's this existing access right mm-hmm. here, and then we're going to have another access right down here, so south of the existing storage units. It's right on the property line, our current property line.
Okay, thank you.
And all those particulars would be included in the site plan, right?
Correct.
Which would be reviewed later.
Right.
Yep. Other questions?
Yes, I didn't catch your name, sir, but I'm interested to know if you had particular concerns about the questions you were asking, and if you do, with the permission of the chair, if you could come up to the microphone. I wasn't quite clear why you were interested in whether somebody owned all three and whether they were going to keep the buildings the way that they were.
The current buildings are dilapidated, vacant, unsecured. We've had police down there about every other day the last month or so. There's storage units, and because they're vacant, there's been people living in them. A lot of drug uses and usage down there. And the actual conditions of the buildings are poor at best. It's unsightly property, a lot of trash dumping. There's a couple couches down there now, and just I got a business adjacent to the property, and it's kind of makes it look the area look a little rough down there. So
okay.
Those are my concerns with it.
Thank you. That's helpful. Thanks. Other questions and comments? I had sort of a question about access. I was sort of surprised as I read the report that this was a planned development. That traffic intersection at 31st near the post office is one of the most confusing traffic situations, I think, in Lawrence. But, I mean, we'll see this in the site plan on where entrance is. Staff, can you give us any what's going on there at 30? I mean, I know that's sort of not connected, but it sort of is, because then that road kind of swings back around and over, and plus I can ask that question now. That's just why.
I'm not sure we have. Sheila may know that.
I mean, that's just crazy over there.
That change occurred when Home Depot and Best Buy went in on the north side, and they needed to have a lighted intersection, and so the post office access change, but the shared it's shared with the east end of the Pine Ridge Plaza development there along 31st Street. It is not the best example of coordinated development.
I wasn't hoping to get that out of you or anything like that. It just that strikes me as odd. And I question for Joy: you guys aren't thinking of doing any access? There's sort of a culvert slash drainage ditch there. You're not going across that part of it there. You know what I'm talking about on sort of the.
Right, there'll be a building along there to kind of shore that up a little bit. While I'm up here, I just wanted to mention that those existing buildings that are there now, the plan is to get the new buildings up on that north and the south piece, and then the existing buildings would eventually be torn down and we'd get new ones up there also matching our new buildings. So that's the long-term plan. So. We're hoping to improve the site. So,
thank you. And Scott, just for the public, can you talk about site plan, the next steps here once we do zoning first, and then this may explain some questions that you have.
Right, and it's very helpful to get the input, because unless we hear it, we don't know what the issues are, and some of them I think can be addressed through site planning, security gates and fencing and access. We can have discussions with the police department to see what kind of issues we're seeing out there that can be addressed through design. But I'm hopeful that the neighbors will see improvements if those kinds of behaviors are happening there, that this may be a method to address them.
So thanks for bringing those forward. We appreciate it. Yeah, Commissioner
Sands. Question for staff. So would it be appropriate when the site plan comes up to add as a exhibit of the staff report recent police or recent crime issues, or is that not appropriate for us to?
Well, we'll carry forward. I don't know that it's appropriate in
right.
what you do with this rezoning,
right.
but we will certainly, we heard the comments, and we'll carry those forward. And also, when the site plan application is submitted, we'll get the same notice that this gentleman received. He'll see for the site plan 400 feet from the property, and we'll have an opportunity to look at the design, discuss with Mary, discuss with Paul Warner's group, you know, different things that maybe he can see that say, okay, this is helpful to my situation. So, yeah. There's a lot of work to do yet on it after it gets rezoned.
Great. Any other questions? Sometimes the cogs of government move really slowly, but we're glad you're here each step of the way. So thank you very much. I'll take a motion, Commissioner Britton. I hope that's what you want to do.
It is.
Good.
I move that we recommend approval of the rezoning request for approximately 1.07 acres from PCD district to CS district and forward it to the City Commission with that recommendation for approval based on the findings of fact found in the body of the staff report.
Thank you, Commissioner Britton. Second, Commissioner Willie. Any further comment, questions? All in favor, raise your hand. Passes 9-0. Thank you very much. And we're moving on to Bullwinkles. At 1344 Tennessee, this is a special use permit.
Again, Becky Pepper. Before we start, I wanted to note that we posted a revised staff report that clarified the discussion related to maximum occupancy. We posted that today, just so you're aware. So this is a special use permit request for Bullwinkles, which is located at 14th and Tennessee, shown by the star here. This is located in the Oread Residents and Oread Neighborhood Association. The slide here shows the surrounding zonings. The property is zoned mixed use, and it is surrounded by RM32, multi-dwelling residential district. The existing land uses of the in the neighborhood are shown here. The single family residential are the yellow lots. Duplex are the grayish lots. And then the brown lots are multifamily. And the red lots are commercial, which there are three, including Bullwinkles. I wanted to provide a little background on this property for you. Prior to 2011, the property was zoned RM32. It contained the bar or lounge use, contained Bullwinkles, which was a non-conforming use at that time. In 2011, this property and a few others in the area were part of a rezoning, rezoned to mixed use. And as part of that rezoning, an automatic SUP was considered with the property. This occurred because the development code provides a provision that an existing use prior to the rezoning to the MU would be given that special use permit. The special use permit was approved by the City Commission on July 19, 2011. The code also dictates that any alterations or expansions of the use are subject to a special use amendment process. And it is that reason why this item is here before you tonight. The proposed project is a 570 square foot building addition on the north side of Bullwinkles. This addition would cross the existing lot lines. And so because of that, a condition of the special use permit is that the lots be combined through the minor subdivision process. The two other existing structures on these lots are multi-dwelling residential structures, and then all three structures are under the same ownership. Here is a picture of the existing conditions of Bullwinkles today as seen from Tennessee Street looking east. So that is the front of Bullwinkles with the multi-dwelling structure that is located to the north. So the building addition would be located in between those two structures. It's highlighted here in yellow. The property is located in the ORI design guidelines. So review of the building addition will be reviewed for compliance with the ORI design guidelines during the building permit process. The distance between the building addition and that this multifamily home is 5 feet at the opening at the front of the building, and it gets as close as 2 feet near the kind of the middle of that wall. So during the building permit review, plans will also be examined to ensure compliance with fire resistant construction requirements. And the existing occupancy limits associated with Bowinkles are shown, provided to you here on this slide. There are indoor and outdoor occupancy limits associated with the bar. The indoor is at 95 occupants, and then the outdoor patio areas, the occupancy limits vary depending on how those areas are configured. The maximum number of occupants allowed in Bowinkles, though, is 269 people, and that number comes from the interior occupancy limit of 95, and then the exterior occupancy limits at standing room. The condition of the SUP is that the maximum occupancy limits that are existing today will not change. They will remain at 269. So while the structure is increasing in square footage, which could result in an increase in the interior occupancy limits, that would lead to a decrease in the occupancy limits of what would be allowed outside. So more people that would be permitted inside would be less people permitted outside, so you'd still get that total number of 269. And the spaces will be designed in a manner that that occupancy limit of 269 cannot be exceeded. So staff recommends forwarding the SUP application to the City Commission with a recommendation of approval based on the findings of fact listed in the staff report and subject to the conditions listed in the report.
Thank you, Becky. Have the applicant or a representative of the applicant?
How do I get back to the... Good evening. Paul Warner Architects. I think Becky summed up a lot of the points were in complete agreement in the staff report. I just brought some other pictures to remind everybody what we started with a few years ago. That was it. So on one hand, we're pretty pleased with where we wound up 3 years later. This body helped with the rezoning to mixed use. Owners have certainly cleaned it up and invested a lot of money. I think obviously being successful, but it would be nice to spread out some of the occupants in a slightly larger building. So that's what you see here. Along with this project, it'll also get the house at 1344 Tennessee will be renovated as well. So that house is in need of a little bit of work. So there's multiple things going on, which is why we think it's a pretty good project. So we're in agreement with the conditions. We look forward to getting started on it, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
This is a public hearing item, so we're going to open it up at this point. If any members of the public would like to speak. Seeing none, we'll bring it back up to the commission for questions, comments, motions.
A question for the applicant. And just wondering, on a normal Friday or weekend night or Thursday night, whatever the night is anymore, what's the number of people in there normally? I mean, are we already approaching that 269 maximum, or is there room to...
No, clearly 269 is, you know, Saturday football game day, you know, probably Friday night. The other bars we work for, right or wrong, it really is about a two-hour window on Friday and Saturday night when anybody really approaches their occupancy. But it is a little convoluted. we're meeting with the fire department Tuesday. I'm going to try to make their life a little easier. If you saw the, it's about the most unique occupancy permit you've ever seen with the four different numbers listed. So we're going to try to make their life a little easier. But I think that shows it. So when they're not crowded, it's obviously nicer to have tables and chairs. And as more people show up, they have to move the tables and chairs to the basement, and then so they stay in line with those occupancies. But it is a pretty small window when you really max out the occupancy. But we're going to try to work with the fire department to make it a little easier on them when they show up and start counting people. Does that help?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Paul, I really appreciate the pictures and like what's happened at Bullwinkle's. You don't have any pictures of 269 people in there, do you?
I do not. Not out there.
Wow. I have a question for you, Paul. So I'm interested in the arrangement of the two homes there and the business. They're all owned by the same, I mean, it's a mixed use, so,
correct.
You know, that falls under. Has any thought been, you know, what happens when we transfer ownership and now, you know, what do we do with those properties?
Well, that's probably, you know, and staff is, I'll probably answer this and they can chime in. I think that's one of the thought processes of making owners today combine both lots into one property. It certainly makes it clearer if somebody tries to buy just one of the properties. Obviously, to your point, it probably helps that they're all under the same ownership when you own a bar, which probably is a noise complaint, one or two, every now and then, and to know that you're renting the tenants and you get to deal with your own tenants and it's your own facility. But the minor sub, to combine them all, makes it crystal clear and makes it a whole lot harder for people to piece these off.
Mr. Sir.
I'm just looking at an aerial on Google Maps, so this may not be updated, but it shows an improved parking lot behind 1344. Is that going to be part of this project if approved?
There is one there now. It's just we
not
always
striped.
Struggle with this on how we explain this to our clients. You can actually park more cars there now than I can show on an approved site plan, just because reality isn't necessarily what all the dimensions we have to deal with. But there is a parking lot there. It'll be improved overall and in better shape with this project.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one looks gravel. Again, this is a Google Maps image, yeah. So it might be outdated. This one looks gravel, that one looked paved, so yeah. The plan is to pave?
It gets paved and improved once this project's all complete.
Okay.
And how do you control parking? Is there any signage that goes there? How do you make, you know?
This parking goes with the residents, so that, you know, residents are pretty good about having cars towed when they can't find a place to park. So reserved parking for residential is, you know, actually works pretty well because people know that somebody's going to pull up and get mad and call a tow truck. That's why, I mean, we've been in agreement and the planning staff's been great along these lines, that the reality is nobody's driving, which is way better to the bars, and you couldn't obviously park the cars anyway, anywhere close. So it's a better plan to provide the parking for the residences and not the commercial use. So, yes?
Actually, I had a question for staff.
Okay.
So even in a minor subdivision where you have one owner and several buildings, is there not a standard for setbacks between existing buildings? Is that 2 feet something that's acceptable?
It's driven by the building code, mm-hmm. building and fire code. In the mixed use district with one lot, after the lot is combined, they can attach buildings or have buildings as close as the design allows.
Okay. There was mention about designing the new addition for fire retardant materials and such, but the additions or the renovations on the house, will that also be a consideration?
Yeah, and Paul, you may want to what you're thinking on that.
It's really only that close at this bay window area of the house, and that area we're not sure at this current moment if it's going to be salvageable. So we've got to work through that as we go forward with the building plans. But no, both of these structures will be sprinkled at the end of the day, fire sprinklers. Mm-hmm. Right now they're not. So once we sprinkle it, on one hand, it kind of takes care of all those issues. But we're 5 feet away now. It's just really tight at that bay window, and that's we're going to look at that as we go forward with this to see if that's going to be salvageable. It's just a little shaky. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter?
Don't go away.
Keep trying.
reaching capacity. I mean, I must drive by there every time it's in that two-hour period, seeing young people out the front door and around the corner waiting to get in. So really, how often do they have people waiting outside to get into the building?
I mean, be honest, I'm not there on Friday or Saturday nights. I've been there Saturday football game days, and when the Wheel's crowded and the Hawks crowded and Bowinkles is crowded, there's no argument. It's being successful. Right now, there's more people out on the patio, so right or wrong, the same number, you do feel like we're getting more people inside the building, which is probably better than outside.
I've gone up and down that 14th Street Hill, I can't count how many times, at the end of the day, picking up my wife from Fraser Hall. We did that quite regularly, and inevitably, Thursday, Friday evening, that place is packed with people waiting to get in. It's that way almost every Saturday afternoon, driving down there. So I think it's more than just 2 hours every so often.
And it's doing well, which is why we're here.
And I think it's quite an improvement with the patio. I mean, I think it's a lot safer with that patio there. It's safer for the students, and because it's primarily a student bar. So anyhow.
You don't go there?
No, I've never actually been in that one. But I'm just curious, and we're expanding the footprint. How do you enforce the maximum number of people inside the structure?
I mean, in reality, the same way we do now.
The fire department,
they know those times. I mean, they show up and they count bodies. The Wheel's right up the street. The Hawk's right around the corner. That's what they do on Friday and probably Thursday, but Friday and Saturday night, certainly. As Scott mentioned, we owe, when we go in for building plans, we owe... the convoluted part of the occupancy permit is the standing room only, chairs with fixed tables, and then tables and chairs that are movable. And those are the three different items, or fixed seating, that actually make up those different types of occupancy. So
those are enforced just by random inspections?
So, I mean, I'd say random, but pretty often. They know where the kids are and the crowds, and they watch them, and they may watch this even a little bit more because they know it's not sprinkled right now. It will be at the end of the day.
Other questions? Mr. Von Hocken?
So apparently this is a place that kids walk to and they don't drive?
Correct.
I mean, I remember it from my days at KU, but... nobody had cars back then, so. Back to the question about the walls, where it comes so close together. Other than sprinkling, do you utilize any other fire retardant materials there?
I mean, this commercial construction, as you know, is built to a little higher level than even residential. But 5 feet setback between structures, all on one lot. 1 hour walls and 2 hour walls, it'll all meet the building code and the fire code and be more safe than it is today.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Bridges?
Question for staff. I mean, do we have any history of occupancy limit problems or anything like that? I mean, I think part of what, at least I think Commissioner Carpenter and I are thinking about is, we're adding a bunch of space with the idea that we're not going to have a bunch more people, but it would be easy to also have a bunch more people if we're not enforcing that limit well. Do we have any information on that?
I don't know that we have information. Becky can speak on this particular site. We can certainly get it. I do know they're routinely checked. And through the years, borrowers come in and out of compliance issues. It depends on management, frankly. The way the system works is that when an architect submits the plans, they put a certain design occupant load on. I'll use an example. Paul can confirm this. Restaurants downtown, for example. The code requires that if you hit 100 occupants, you have to sprinkle the space. And so what designers get paid to do sometimes is reduce cost of infrastructure of building. So they'll design that area, that public area, down to just under 100 occupants. It's called a design occupancy. And so we permit that, and it's based on sometimes whether or not there's permanent tables and chairs and how long the queue line is and in a ordering queue and that kind of thing. And then it gets designated a certain occupancy for the space. We have a occupancy sign in this room for a certain number. And then the fire department has authority to go in and look at any time what that occupancy is of that public space. Our fire department pays particular attention to those uses that can be dangerous if that occupancy is exceeded, and went so far recently as to put occupancy on patio areas, outdoor areas. That's a relatively new policy of the department, to not only designate the interior of the space, but the outside patio areas of the space. That's why you see that they're treating that patio area as outdoor space, and so it's got three different spaces that have different, depending on its configuration, it has different occupancies. So this is a little squirrely for a fire inspector to go in and figure out, is that space standing room only, or has it got tables and chairs? But then they use that to go ahead and do their count. And there have been some, to my knowledge, some issues with certain bars. I can't speak to this. I'm not saying this one has had any issues. I do not know what the history is on this.
That's
helpful. There's a separate enforcement process for that. Mm-hmm. And just keeping on the occupancy, the reason we're holding the occupancy, we normally don't. I mean, this isn't a discussion we have with you very often. But the reason is because it's coming in under existing conditions, and when we first started talking about the possibilities of expanding, we talked about parking. And the parking is driven by the occupancy for the bar use. It's not by space. It's by occupancy. It's by design occupancy load. And so that's why we're saying that, okay, if we hold the existing condition at 269, which is the condition today, then there would be no need to supply, really seek a variance for not providing parking, because you're not changing anything about that parking condition there. So that's how we landed here.
Yeah. I was trying to think. I couldn't really remember the last time we talked about occupancy limits up here. So
just a little bit further on that, Scott, if down the road they were to look to increase occupancy, it would be subject to parking requirements?
Correct.
And then what would also happen to this SUP?
Well, what would happen is that they would have to go through this SUP amendment maybe it depends a little bit on what they're trying to do. If it's just interior-wise, the SUP exists for the use and the building size on the property, it likely may just be a BZA item because the use is not being affected necessarily, but there would be a public process involved.
Thanks.
By that time, we might actually have a new parking plan, which could actually limit spaces in that area that visitors to the bar could be using in the first place if they go to metered or electronic tags or something up there.
Possibly.
So, I don't know. There's a lot of variables coming down here in the future.
Yeah.
Just a comment. I mean, I see occupancy similar to our other building codes, and that enforcement is the best tool that we have. If it meets the building codes and we have our technical experts saying, yeah, we can get 269 people in there safely, then I think we owe it to our experts to honor that. And then if there's over 269 people in there, it'll be enforced or not, and hopefully it is, because I think that's about human safety and human lives, and that's what's most important.
And with the addition that the new property then would be sprinkled, which is currently not under the same occupancy, I think that's quite a gain.
Commissioner,
I have a question for staff. What's the number of bedrooms on 1344? Because the staff report mentions that 314 West 14th, which is the one on the south there, has, there's a confusion as 5 versus 7 mm-hmm. bedrooms, but what about 1344, since they're all going to be on the same lot? Or I guess maybe that's a question for you, Paul.
314 West 14th has 7 bedrooms now, and the address is wrong on the color rendering. It shows our intern's not old enough to drink yet, so she doesn't go to Bullwinkle's. 1340 right now is operated as the as Becky's example showed earlier, as a single-family home. Once all of this is done, it'll be converted to a congregate residence, and our plan is to probably have 7 bedrooms. And that's why it would be sprinkled. Right now, it's not. It's just operating as a single-family home.
Okay, so one property's got 7. The other property will soon have 7.
Correct.
Okay.
Question for staff. So those residences will need to fall under the ORIAD guidelines that we approved recently. If they're renovated, they'll need to...
Yeah. Yes, that became effective February 6th. So, yes.
All know. All right. Any motions? More conversation?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I can't recall if you closed the public hearing. I saw Dr. Reardon come in, and I know Becky had spoken with him about this process. You may wish to reopen to get some comments from Dr. Reardon.
Do you have any other public comments on this item? We're on Bullwinkle's. If you're here to speak on Bullwinkle's, we'll be happy to listen to you.
Thank you. Terry Reardon, live at 1613 Tennessee, just down the street from here. Have been involved with the city, the ORIAD Neighborhood Association, City Planning Commission, which I very much appreciate all that you're doing. I know exactly the pain that you're going through and also the joy at times. So I'm here tonight because I had some questions and some concerns about this particular project. If you'll let me take just a second and find where I need to be. One of the things that was of question is this, I think it was item 2, is this consistent with what's in this area? And when you look at the map, and I'd encourage you to go to the zoning map, you can't find this district here. It has little bitty letters on 14th Street between Ohio and between Tennessee that says MU, but there's nothing on the map that has a color, nothing on the map that tells you what parcels are part of that, so it's really not very informative. I talked with Becky, and Becky was very helpful for that. So I think that there could be improvements there. So my concern is, one is that when you look at all the other three items today, you saw pictures of what was around it. With this one, you didn't. And I was concerned with that because I thought this was very important to determine that we have an RS7, we have an RS5, we have an RM32, and all those are affected by this. And this is the only structure that will be 2 feet apart. And it wasn't clear on the staff report that it was going to be 2 feet apart at the smallest area. And I worry about an old house, living in an old house. We've had at least 4 fires on Tennessee and Kentucky where we haven't had a disaster because the houses are typically 10, 12, 15 feet apart. So it concerns me, and I'm glad that the Planning Commission was discussing that. But you won't find any other houses around there, and it didn't seem right to me to compare this to that area that was zoned, which is only a few parcels. It should have been compared to the area around it like it's typically done. I go down Tennessee all the time, and there's also concern with the next one about safety. When I go down Tennessee, it's not unusual. I've seen it multiple times where people are totally lined up on the outside, they're coming down the walkway, and they're out on the street. I don't think that should be allowed. I don't think we're doing a very good job of looking at safety, and that's one of the things that I do every day. So I have concerns. Why is this occurring? It occurred before, but now what happens is if you have more students there, you get more because they want to be where everybody is. I get that. And so you'll have 100 people sitting on the outside. We had a tragedy here about 15 years ago where somebody stumbled out onto the street or walked out onto the street. This is so close to the street. To provide safety for this, I want you to think very carefully about what we're doing here. The last point that I would like to make is that I have more concerns about what happens to this property afterwards. In the Oregon Neighborhood Association, when we were part of that, and now it's a different associate, there's two associations there. One of the concerns that we had was demolition by neglect. And what's going to happen to this house, the houses that are part of, are there two houses or just one that are part of this parcel? There's two. So one is a couple feet away. What happens to that house when we come to a point where that house can't be salvaged? They're going to want to tear it down. What are they going to put there? Well, you can put, and I was interested to see, 0 to 25 feet in between. In other words, you can have a wall between the different structures. So what's going to go there? I hate to have a house torn down and have a problem like that because we didn't think about it ahead of time.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We have a three-minute limit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So I have concerns about what's going to happen to that. I'd like to see something that says, we need to have a residential house persisting on this property. I'm not against this. I think it's a wonderful, actually, Warner's done a very good job with this. So those are some of the concerns I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Close the public hearing again. Other comments, questions?
Well, I keep going back to the distance between the two buildings myself, and I have to admit that when I looked at this at home, I didn't realize how close they were in the one area of the bay window. How is that allowed in the Oriad Neighbor Guidelines, the Oriad Neighborhood Guidelines? Is that allowed?
So the mixed-use district is a specific category in the guidelines, and it really sort of gives deference to the mixed-use district standards, which do allow that kind of closeness of buildings. So yeah, in a typical residential situation, you're looking for that space, kind of negative space pattern. But the MU district would actually calls for more density, more intensity, closer buildings to the street, not the typical residential pattern there. So that's how the code addresses it. And I might too say that I think a lot of people will agree with Dr. Reardon's comments about the people outside of the building, maybe even on the street. A few years ago, as this property started to change, we actually worked pretty hard to get some of the patio area where people were kind of loitering outside the fence and talking over the fence to some people. Sorry, Commissioner Weaver, this just bugs me. We actually worked pretty hard on landscaping out in the right-of-way to get people to reduce the loitering, as well as try to keep people on the far side of the fence from coming over. So I don't know if that has worked over time, but there certainly has been effort put to that, I guess. And sort of closing up that patio may have been the best thing to help with that, but I'm not there on Friday and Saturday nights either, so I'm not sure how it works.
I'll just say from my experience, I mean, I've seen the lines out there and, you know, gone past there so many times before the patio and after. What the patio has done is it's kept, I think it's cut down the number of people stumbling out into the street. But going down that 14th Street hill past the wheel and then past Bullwinkle's is just, boy, you have to creep down that hill, because The students are walking out of those two bars with cups in their hands, and they just walk straight into the street. Is there? I just wonder if there's some way to kind of prevent that, except for right at the intersections. Is there like a railing that can go down one side of the sidewalk to keep them in? I mean, is there some way to do that? Because it is, at times, game days is its own phenomena because people are just in the streets anyway. But just the normal Friday night, Thursday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, there is usually a line going out the door and around the corner.
I think we can look at some options for that, certainly.
Because as far as I remember, that's the only place that we've had a bar where a student has been struck and killed by a car, too, in front of there. In the time I've lived in Lawrence, and as Dr. Reardon referenced that one.
Yeah. And I think that's why some effort has been made. And even this, not intensifying the number of people in there, doesn't really help the issue, but doesn't egg it on either.
It just pushes more people outside waiting to get in.
It may.
And that's, I think, has become a greater hazard at times, is the number of people waiting to get into this bar. But, I'm just... Obviously, they're monitoring the number of people they're in, or they wouldn't have a line out the door. But kind of a softball question. Thought I'd get that answer, that they are counting the people in the bar. But, something's going on that's pushing people outside. But
just a comment. I think I would expect for a long period of time we'll be trying to control young people drinking, staying where we want them to stay. I mean, I think in downtown we have some similar conditions on Fridays and Saturday nights. Yeah. Sort of thinking maybe we should defer this item and do some research here. I'm kidding, Paul. I'm sorry.
I was going to make that.
That's one of the reasons there's a
site visit.
Rail right across the street between the parking lot and here is because people were just crossing 6th Street to get to City Hall, but that's why there's a rail there now.
I think once we get into crowd control, especially when they're outside of a facility, it becomes really, really problematic. One question I had for staff is, and I appreciate the applicant mentioning that they're going to sprinkle the space next door, and while I understand it meets the code, there seems to be some heartburn on the commission about how close those buildings are together for fire code. There's nothing that mentions that building next door will be sprinkled in the conditional.
It's a function of converting that to the congregate living use.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's going to be sprinkled. The other parts of that review are going to be bedroom egress windows coming out to that space. If that's going to, it'll all meet fire code. It, not unlike many of the challenges we have with party walls downtown and having buildings butted up next to each, literally touching, and how windows and egress and fire codes work.
Yeah. I mean, this is certainly a unique, and any mixed-use project is unique, but it's, to Dr. Reardon's point, it is unique in where it is and where it is in the neighborhood, and I think that poses some challenges. I'm feeling comfort, by knowing the codes, by knowing that we're sprinkling, by, that time has been taken to control those factors that we can control. There are a lot of factors that drunk college students is definitely one we aren't going to be able to control, so...
Yeah. And to Dr. Reardon's point about demolition by neglect, at least for this building and the residents, there's going to be significant funds put into that renovation. Mm-hmm. So at least for many, many years, it's our thought that it would be well maintained. But
Commissioner Britton, thank you, Commissioner Sain. I obviously share a lot of these concerns about safety with people coming in and going out, and it's not, that whole area is like that, whether you're driving right by Bullwinkle's or the Wheel or not. I think I remember somebody got hit by a car and killed at like 13th and Kentucky, probably after leaving Bullwinkle's or the Hawk or whatever it was. It's an issue all around there. I used to live in the scholarship halls in undergrad, and if I was coming back any time on a weekend evening, I would just assume that I would have to crawl through on 14th Street. That's always going to be a problem. I don't really see any of the things that we're being asked to look at or approve here as
as impacting negatively or positively a lot of that those kinds of issues as much. I suppose if the increased space in Bullwinkle's also increases demand and thereby lengthens the line outside, then you could have some issues there with people having to wait longer outside. But then I guess a solution to that would be to increase the occupancy.
For the price of beer.
Right. But then as Dr. Reardon mentions, you know, the more people you have there, the more people probably want to go there. So it's just maybe not something that can truly and fully be solved. And I don't think it seems like it's really something, and I'd be interested to hear other commissioners, something that we're, that what we're being asked to approve is going to really affect. So the issues of, you know, fire safety with building right up next to the residence next door, you know, that's a little bit concerning, but I do trust that the, you know, the fire code will be adhered to. And as far as the occupancy limit, you know, reading this the other day, I kind of thought, well, why are they spending all this money to do all these improvements just to, you know, potentially have the same number of people coming in there drinking the same number of beers? So part of me wonders, you know, if this is, if we won't see a request to change that occupancy limit down the road. I don't know that that would necessarily be a terrible thing because it's foot traffic and this area is what it is. But if that's what we're, you know, looking at, the same number of people in the same place in the neighborhood, I guess I don't see a huge, I don't know if this is the kind of thing you probably just shouldn't say, but it doesn't seem like there's a huge safety difference there. It's dangerous now, and it will be dangerous after this if we were to approve it. So I don't know. That's a little bit of rambling, random thoughts, but that's kind of what I'm thinking on this. I'm interested to hear what the
Mr.
rest Sam, of the commission
did you
thinks.
Have a comment?
Yeah, I'm I think to kind of echo some of Dr. Reardon's concerns, I was just doing a quick look through some old LJW headlines. Without doing a laydown on patterns of where pedestrians are struck, I don't frequent that neighborhood as often as everybody else, but I can tell you, driving down that street, I have learned to be very deliberate. Driving down Tennessee, I've learned to be very deliberate. And it's not just Bullwinkle's, it's the fraternities also. So people walk out from cars. So I'm not sure there's anything to be done about that. That doesn't mean I'm comfortable, 100% comfortable with increasing the occupancy of this building. Scott, I had a question, if I could. Can you remind everyone what the difference between going from a single family to a congregate living, what the differences, key differences are?
So the congregate living use is the only residential use, aside from fraternity and sorority, that allows one to go above four unrelated people in the structure. So it's essentially a single family home that allows more than four unrelated persons to live there. The parking's a little different in that it's required at one per bedroom versus just two for a single family structure. And from a building code standpoint, it does require sprinklering where a single family home does not.
Well, so I'd say at least on the plans that I see, it looks like the parking's sufficient for both the residential properties. If I had to count spaces, I think it's 11 to 14. Spaces to beds. I think that's sufficient. I don't know. I'd be interested in what everybody else thinks. I'm not in love with the concept of putting all these lots together and having residential on the same lot as a bar. But then again, it's existed this way for how many years, and the issues are what the issues are. So I'm not sure combining the lots or refusing to combine the lots really alters reality all that much.
Mr. Burton?
I just had a quick question. So this SUP doesn't deal with the bar lounge use at all.
This is just about the physical building addition here.
I think that's the right way to look at it. It has a current SUP for the
right.
use.
And how long until that one expires?
It doesn't have a time limit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure I understood that. Right.
Commissioner Colbert?
Yeah, just a few comments. In trying to focus in on the issue in front of us, and because they are asking for an addition to the building without asking for an increase in occupancy, I think that fits this SUP in our role here. I think if they were asking for more occupancy along with this, that becomes a deeper discussion. And to the point of after this, then applying a minor subdivision to have those lots combined, actually I think makes it better not only for the property owner, because they have a vested interest in both the business and the residents, they also I think are doing a better job for the neighbors in the surrounding community, because they have that vested interest, again, residential and from a business standpoint. And then down the road, I think there's more certainty of what may happen to those properties if they're combined versus if they're individual lots. And so those are my thoughts on it. I think the issue before us with the SUP not expanding on the occupancy but expanding the space, if that is in the best interest of the business, I'm supportive of that, and I don't see additional concerns. And particularly if they're going to increase the safety of the structures by sprinkling the business, and then once they take that property to the north and make it congregate living, also increase the safety there with sprinkling it and some of the other standards. I think it makes perfect sense.
Would you like to make a motion based on that perfect sense?
Sure. I'd recommend approval for the special use permit to allow a building addition for Bullwinkle's located at 1344 Tennessee Street and forwarding it to the request to the City Commission with the recommendation of approval subject to the following conditions listed in the staff report.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Commissioner Sands second. Commissioner Kohler had the motion. Any further discussion? Commissioner Britton?
I'll just note that I will vote for this for basically the reasons that Commissioner Colver just explained. I do hope, I always expect that people will follow the rules and conditions and build to the code and follow the fire code and the occupancy restriction. But I'm voting to approve this or recommend approval, on the assumption that it's going to be 269 and no more than that, and that the property owner or the manager, whoever is running the place, will studiously enforce that, and if they have to do one in, one out, and all that kind of stuff, that they'll do that. But otherwise, yeah, I think this is a nice improvement for that area, and I don't think that it will have significant impacts, at least not significant negative impacts, on the safety issues that we all acknowledge exist there. Mm-hmm. And hopefully maybe it'll help a little bit.
Okay, seeing no other comments, all in favor, raise your hand. Passes 9-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 5 is a variance at I'm having problems with numbers tonight. Variance at 1144 East 1200 Road.
Mary Miller, planner, and this variance is a little unusual. We don't do very many variances for certificates of survey, but they are included in the subdivision regulations. So when we need a variance from the standards and the subregs, it comes to the Planning Commission. We've done a few in the past, primarily for access. This one is a request for variance to allow a property to divide when it has less than 20 acres. The property is located on the east side of 1200 Road. It's about a little bit less than a mile and a half south of city limits, and it's west of Highway 59. This shows the surrounding area. It's got it's on a major collector road and has direct access to North 1200 Road, which is a principal arterial, and then also direct access to Highway 59, which is freeway. There's quite a bit of floodplain in the area. This will limit residential development to the north. Under the county subregs and the county zoning regulations, if you have not divided a property already and you want to divide it for residential development in the floodplain, you have to have at least 3 acres outside the floodplain. And to the north, you can see the very large parcels. It would be not possible to develop that. You could not divide that into 3 acres outside of the floodplain. There is a little bit of floodplain on the subject property itself. This just shows the proposed development. We don't have a certificate of survey submitted yet, but they wanted to submit the variance request first before they went through the expense and trouble of actually preparing the certificate of survey. But this is their concept plan. When you do a certificate of survey in the urban growth area, you're required to set aside 40% of it as future development area. And this provides some open space, and it maintains the rural character. And that's the green area on this. It cannot be developed until it's annexed into the city. It does contain a pond. It would be open space for the development. And then the 3 white parcels would be residential development parcels. And right now, the property is vested for development of 1 residence. And so if the variance was approved, the certificate of survey would allow 2 additional residential parcels. This is a picture from the staff report, and the red dots just show parcels that were measured to show what the area is in the general area. And it ranges from slightly less than 1 acre down in the corner to a little bit over 30 acres. And so we have a wide range of size differences. The subject parcels are actually a little bit above average, or the mean, I would say, of what's currently there. So the reason for the variance, typically if you don't have 20 acres, the answer is a pretty sound no, but you would always say you could ask for a variance. When staff tries to determine what we would recommend on the variance, we try to look at why is there less than 20 acres. The applicant provided some historical deeds that shows that the half acre was removed back in the 1920s. We don't have any deeds before that that we could find. And it's a 16-foot or 1 broad along the northern property line that's been removed, and it goes along this entire parcel here, which maybe in the 20s was 1 parcel, and it may have been removed and attached to the parcel to the north at that time. This kind of shows the detail. You can see here how it's offset, the 16 feet in that corner, and also over in this corner. And the reason you see 2 lines here is because there's a private road there now, and this was where a access drive was installed, and it was never actually formally approved. You cannot find any records it was ever formally approved as a private road, but at one point in time, the county commission, they kind of grandfathered in shared drives and made them private roads. And they set a grandfather and a sunset clause. You could not do any past that date, but if you had a shared drive, it became a private road. So this is just a close-up of the property showing that the road, the access is taken in this little area, the 16-feet area on the north property line. This house was built, I'm not sure if it was in the 60s, but it was, you know, fairly recently. And this shows a better graphic kind of outlining the parcel lines and the fact that this strip was tied to this parcel for access. So then we looked at some historical aerials. This is one that was in your staff report from 1936 or 37. It's kind of hard to see, but you can see there is a dwelling on the property to the north, and then we do have some access drives coming down just right north of the property. It's a little clearer in this 1941 aerial. You can actually see the access drive going right along the north side of the property. So in staff's opinion, I think it's fairly safe to assume that that 16 feet was cut off in order to accommodate access to the parcel to the north. It would have had access before it was sold off the little parcels and became a separate parcel on its own. At that point, it became landlocked. So with the variance criteria in the subregs, we have 3 criteria you have to look at. If you apply the code strictly, is it an unnecessary hardship on the subdivider? Is the variance in harmony with the purpose of the subregs, and is the public health, safety, and welfare protected? As the slide showed, the development will be very similar in character to what's already in the area. There's quite a few residential developments on a variety of size of lots, but small lot rural residential development is very common in this area. And the hardship, not being able to divide it in that way, may be unnecessary given the fact that it would be compatible with the surrounding area. The subregs state the purpose of the cluster development, that's what we call the developments in the urban growth area, is to cluster development on 20 acres. It allows you to, number one, do some planning for when it's annexed into the city. You plan where things are to be located. You do a build-out plan. That way it can be future divided. We don't have houses in the normal place where you would want to extend a street in the future. It's also meant to reduce the need for additional infrastructure. So when the houses are clustered like that, they use one access drive. It's not necessary to add another street or road like you used to do with subdivisions, platted subdivisions. And they wanted to maintain the rural character. And so putting aside the 40% of the open space and not allowing that to be developed, that does retain the open space and the rural character. Given that the 16 feet was probably removed in order to accommodate a parcel to the north, although we don't have any records indicating that, it seems like a pretty safe assumption. And the fact that it is very similar to the surrounding area, it does maintain the rural character. In staff's opinion, the variance would be in harmony with the purpose. The fact that the land division was done to accommodate access, that sets a very narrow precedent. We would be concerned with just allowing it to be 19 and a half just because it's close, but we would need to see some sort of a limiting factor. And if we can find that it was done to accommodate the adjacent property, then we have a pretty narrow precedent that we're setting. It would only apply to other properties that maybe had limited area due to that fact. And then the final criteria is the public health, safety, and welfare being protected. With the way it stands now, one house could be built here with one access point on East 1200 Road. And with the variance, you could have three residences, but they would all have to share the same one access point. So we would not be increasing the access point on the road. And this public health, the safety, and welfare should not be impacted with the development. And so staff is recommending approval of the variance, subject to the one condition, and that is the note that's listed in the staff report. And the note very, very clearly states that the reason for the variance is that the 16 feet is determined to have been divided off to accommodate access, and it's not just for any parcel. And that way we are kind of limiting the precedent-setting effect here.
Thank you, Mary. I believe the applicant may be here, or a representative of the applicant.
Good evening, Commissioners. Dean Grove with Grove Engineering. I could sure do a presentation, but I don't think I could do any better than Mary just did. Appreciate all the hard work, because as I did a lot of research, found the same thing, that, you know, and there's a lot of pieces out there that somehow a piece just goes away from something and nobody really knows why. But I'll be happy to answer any questions. The property owners here, if you've got questions from them, otherwise I'll sit down and let you talk.
Thanks, Dean. I don't think there's anybody behind that pillar, so unless any of the three of you want to visit with us about it, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back up here for questions and motions. Commissioner Von Ock.
I move that we recommend approval of the variance request to allow a certificate of survey to occur on the subject property with less than the required 20 acres based on the findings of fact found in the body of the staff report and subject to the listed condition.
Commissioner Britton seconds.
Quick comment.
Comment, Commissioner Culver?
I do believe that the condition there that lists the background or the reasoning why this variance is something we would look at, other than the fact it's just close to 20 acres, is very helpful for us. But maybe more importantly, down the road, if somebody were to look at this and see this is why this variance was approved, I think that helps all around.
Mr. Britton?
I agree and want to commend staff on doing a good job of making that clear here and appropriately limiting this in terms of any precedent that it might set. I also just really like it anytime we get really old aerial photographs. So more of those, even when they're totally unnecessary. I think we should see old aerial photographs.
All right. With no other comments about aerial photographs or anything else on this, all in favor, raise your hand. Passes 9-0. Thank you very much. Okay. That wraps up our agenda because there were two items that were deferred. We get to wait to hear further about columbariums and microwave towers.
What did you do now, Jim?
We're
just trying to
wait out Jim's.
Any miscellaneous new or old business?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. With that, we are adjourned.